Hey, Laurel.
Hey, Sean.
So what's up?
Not much. You know, I've just been thinking about all the big kind of twists we've had in the news in the past couple weeks.
Like what level twist are we talking here?
Oh, man. I'm talking like end of Star Wars big. Like,
oh, Empire Strikes Back. I know what you're talking about. Classic scene.
Yep. Darth Vader meets Luke Skywalker and Luke gets a cut on his arm.
Oh, yeah, totally. What about, since it's the holidays, another classic twist? It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart has a bad day.
Crashes his car into that old tree.
It's a tragedy. So we're going to talk about the news in Wisconsin politics, though. So what are you thinking about?
So I'm thinking some of the big stuff that the governor has said at the end of the year, things that Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has said, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, and some big things that the courts have been saying as well.
Yeah, actually a lot of developments this week for what's sometimes a slow holiday news season.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel Waite.
This week... Last-minute twists in 2019 news. So before we get started here, we should mention that our resident politics nerd, John K. Wilson, is not with us today, though he will be back. John is in the holiday spirit.
Yes, out doing holiday things.
No doubt. Yeah. You know, he's always just like spreading that holiday cheer.
Spreading that cheer, yeah.
Yeah, he's a curmudgeon for the news, but you get him around the holidays. He's wearing Santa suits all the time and just like throwing cookies around. It's just embarrassing, honestly.
It's a lot. So, but he's out in the world now doing that. And, you're welcome, world.
Right. So that leaves us to talk about the news. And here's a holiday tradition that we love as journalists. We get to sit down with newsmakers sometimes, and we get one-on-ones with some of these newsmakers. And we think we're getting something special, although typically they tell, they know what scoops they're going to give people going into these things.
Yeah.
And so we had a few little sizable pieces of news, we'll call them. Sizable pieces of news.
Little sizable pieces. That's the new title of this podcast. Forget the twist thing.
Yeah, and these year-end interviews. And so let's start with the governor. So, yeah. I mean, I can tell you, I got to sit down with the governor this time because you were sitting down with Speaker Voss at almost the same time.
Yep.
And... you know, we wanted to ask the governor about Foxconn because there's been all this stuff in the news lately about Foxconn's contract and where the state and Foxconn see the status of that contract.
Yeah.
The governor is saying, yeah, I don't think the contract really fits what they're doing here.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you've now heard this from his Department of Administration. You've heard it from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, which is now under the leadership of his CEO, somebody that he chose for that role.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've heard it from the governor, where he's saying, Foxconn, yeah, we maybe need to revisit this.
Yeah. Well, and this comes down to, for people that are not intimately familiar with the Foxconn contract, I'm sure everyone listening is, but just in case, this comes down to whether they actually build the type of product that they outline in the contract. So the contract says they will build a Generation 10.5 facility, which is for a specific kind of screen. And Foxconn has changed their plan and has publicly said that they're planning on a Gen 6 facility now. And so the governor says, you know, they're doing something different that's in the contract. I think we need to revisit this. And it's becoming just, there's always been conversation from Evers, right, about, you know, maybe Foxconn not meeting the job creation goals or Foxconn switching things up a little bit. But now we have him firmly saying, like, I don't think they're in compliance with this contract and we need to do something about it.
Yeah, they've got this thing now that they can point to. And my read of this is if Foxconn has to build a Generation 10.5 plant, we're going to talk about what that means real quick.
Yeah.
They are never going to be in compliance with this contract ever, like ever. So I didn't know what this term meant until about a year ago, Generation 10.5. Mm-hmm. It's talking about for an LCD plant, you're talking about building the largest, most technologically advanced displays in the world, gigantic televisions, basically. They're not going to do that because they can't get glass to that plant for screens that big, unless you have somebody that's building glass like right next door.
Close by.
But to do that, the companies that do that would want a sizable payment from the state to do that, and it's not going to happen. So here we are. Foxconn's not going to build those kinds of TVs in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So if the Evers administration is saying, look, you're in violation of the contract because it says you're going to build those things, you promised those things, and you're not doing it, what does that mean? Like, if it means, according to the governor, we need to reopen this. So the day that he said that, Foxconn came out and said, we can confirm that we are in discussions with the state. Mm-hmm. So they're talking about this. I wonder what that means. I wonder what an amended contract or a different contract would look like.
Yeah. And I think an important thing to mention here is that a renegotiation of an incentives contract like this is not uncommon at all. Like, this happens a lot. These contracts are opened up and changed.
Because you've been looking into this for another story.
Yeah, I've been talking to a lot of economists and experts that that focus on incentive deals across the country. And so I've asked them, you know, how unusual is it? What's going on with Foxconn right now? And they say that actually it's very, very typical for companies to sort of want to change things as they move forward with plans, often because they're building something different or, you know, doing something, a variance kind of like that. But they said what's a little bit different here is there's just been some more public, there's more of a public eye on the Foxconn deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so normally this type of thing would happen sort of behind closed doors or just like below people's radar.
Yeah, nothing. Yeah. Well, Foxconn happens both below the radar and like under a spotlight simultaneously, because we're never quite sure what the company is up to, because they kind of keep us guessing.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about building a Generation 6 plant, but now it sounds like their plans may be other devices until like 2022 or so, when they say
then,
that.
And then go to the Generation 6 screens.
Yeah. So
they talked about like the coffee kiosks and like other things that they might be building. There have been other products that have been kind of floated out there for things that could be built at the plant.
So the Republican response to Evers saying we need to renegotiate this is, you really don't. It's just a technical thing. Speaker Voss talked to you about this. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald talked to our colleague Corinne Hess about this. And I mean, what's their basic argument?
So Speaker Voss said that he doesn't mind if the contract has, he called it minutia, if you go in and just change what kind of product is being made there, or removing any specification of, you know, having to sort of have that outlined in the contract. He's like, yeah, fine, whatever, go ahead and do that. But I think he has concerns about making bigger changes to the contract, because Republicans have been kind of touting this contract as a really good one for the state, having these protections and these job benchmarks and specifications about, you know, how much people have to make for jobs to qualify and things like that. So they don't want to mess with the contract too much.
So I guess the counter to that is that this Foxconn deal was reached. I mean, we were there for it. It was described as sort of this groundbreaking new industry that they were bringing mm-hmm. to North America, and that the state wouldn't normally step in and offer these kinds of incentives. But here was a chance to bring TV manufacturing to North America again.
Right.
And now, at least in the short term, they're not building TVs. They may eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to kind of remember the debate and what was being said about the Foxconn deal in order to reach this deal. It's just an important reminder every now and then as we talk about it going
forward.
Sort
of how you justify the size of the deal was part, the product was part of that.
And one other thing, we have heard the governor's Weedick CEO talk publicly in very positive terms about Foxconn. I was struck by that too. But you see these letters between Weedick and Foxconn going back and forth, and like they got some issues they got to work out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a quick mention too of just the new audit that came out about Weedick and them being able to weed out of state jobs to make sure that the state isn't paying incentives for jobs for Foxconn that are outside of Wisconsin. So that's something that's going to be on our radar moving into next year too.
And the audit bureau basically saying you still can't do this right. You still don't have enough safeguards to prevent these tax credits from going toward out of state workers.
Yeah.
So other stuff that stuck out to me in my interview with the governor, I'm just trying to think back. He talked about, because I asked him a little bit about impeachment. Mm-hmm. You know, do you think that Congress did the right thing by passing those articles of impeachment. And his direct quote, quote, "That's impossible for me to say. I'm a state politician. I'm a governor." So that's a Scott Walker response there, right? Like, yes. Oh, you know, federal issues.
I'm focused on the state of Wisconsin.
Yep.
Very gubernatorial response there.
And then when I asked the governor about whether the state might pass a law, whether he might sign a law, agree to something with Republicans to respond to the recent incidents of violence in Wisconsin schools, he said maybe there might be room to find common ground for some type of mental health funding to try to, address that, since the two parties can't come together on something like background checks or a red flag law. He said maybe there's common ground on mental health funding. Take it away, Laurel.
Yeah, so that is a really wonderful segue into my year-end interview with Speaker Voss, because I asked about that. I said, do you expect the assembly to do anything related to mental health and guns in the new year, because that's something that your caucus has talked about. And this was, I think, my big twist from the speaker interview. He said, no, I actually don't think we're going to do anything with mental health. I think we've done enough on mental health, and we're going to focus on this other proposal to change penalties on people who commit a crime with a weapon, to make sure that, in his words, they're adequately punished. But we're going to move away from mental health. And that was really surprising to me, because that's something that they've talked about for a while.
I do think that was to me a big twist.
Yeah.
Because this is something where it's not just like a few Republicans here or there have talked about this. I mean, I remember Scott Walker talking a lot about this, that when it comes to addressing gun violence, got to look to mental health. He just talked about it at a Milwaukee Press Club forum, actually, that we covered. Now Corrine Hess again,
the WPR
covered. Yeah. He's not governor anymore. But, I know that Jim Steinke, the Assembly Majority Leader, this is something he has talked about as a potential place where the parties could come together. Mm-hmm. And it just looked like from a distance, okay, yeah, that's I could see that happening. And the speaker basically told you, I mean, I'm looking at the quotes that you got from Speaker Voss.
Yeah.
It looks like a pretty firm no there on that one.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because as we were having conversations about the background checks and the red flag law, which are things that Democrats pushed consistently over the past year, Republicans' response was often, the root cause of these problems are mental health issues for people. We need to provide support for that. Of course, we're not going to support these other plans. We have Second Amendment and due process rights, so we need to do something that's more bipartisan in nature. And mental health was kind of floated as something that could be that bipartisan plan. And almost exactly at the moment, you and I were doing those interviews at the same time. You were talking to the governor, I was talking to the speaker, and just as the governor was saying, I think we can compromise on mental health, Speaker Voss was saying, yeah, we've done enough for mental health. We've covered that ground, because they have passed some bills and some things in the budget and, invested in some programs there. He said, nope, that's kind of off the table, I think.
What about medical marijuana? Another thing where the governor's saying like, hey, I think it's positive that we've got this movement here. What did the speaker say about that?
So I was really anxious to ask the speaker about medical marijuana, because we had this Republican proposal come out, two Republican sponsors of this bill, which is a change, because we've had obviously Democratic proposals for years. We've had one proposal that had a few Republicans sign on, but this is a big change for the medical marijuana debate to have this Republican-backed bill. So I wanted to ask him, how is this going to move forward? Do you see it getting a public hearing?
Because that's one of the goals that the sponsor had for it, Mary Felskowski. Not thinking it's going to pass this year. She says, I just want a public hearing. I want to get this ball rolling here.
She wanted to clear up some misconceptions. She kind of wanted to have that debate happen in public. The speaker had a really different perception of that. He said a public hearing, in his thought, would actually hurt the cause of the bill, because he thought the debate that would happen at a public hearing would be sort of the same arguments that Democrats and Republicans have had over time. Democrats sort of criticizing Republicans for not moving forward with full legalization. The speaker said what he wants to do, instead of having a public hearing, is kind of have behind-the-scenes conversations, particularly with members of the state Senate, about what it would take to get them to a yes on the bill, because he wants to get to a yes. The speaker has been a proponent of medical marijuana in some form for a while. So he says, you know, I want to see this become law, but I just don't want to rush the process and hurt its chances by moving it forward more quickly than I think it should be moved.
I think I actually covered the last hearing on medical marijuana for just a standalone bill.
Oh, yeah?
I think it was in the 2009 session when Democrats were running everything.
Okay.
We're in a different place than we were then. But that issue, that time, it was very much like advocates of medical marijuana kind of chastising lawmakers. And it was then Senator Leah Vukmir, mm-hmm. may have been Representative Leah Vukmir at the time anyway, conservative Republican, and she was not having it, man.
Yeah, she was very strongly opposed to medical marijuana.
Very strongly. She said, this is just, you know, you're just putting this in here as a way to get full legalization, and I'm not going to have it. So mm-hmm. that's the kind of debate we had 10 years ago. I don't know what it would be like if we had it this time. I don't think we're going to find out.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing, and this is just a quick aside, but it's sort of a similar argument from the speaker to one that we're hearing about that homelessness funding held up in the Senate. So the speaker is saying we need to have behind the scenes conversations. We need to work with people to get them to a yes rather than having this debate out in public. That's what some proponents of the homelessness funding have said as well. They've said, you know, if we have a public hearing on this, that's not going to get us anywhere. That's just going to sort of entrench the opposition. What we need to do is talk to the opposition and say, hey, what changes do you need? It's almost kind of this conflict between what sort of negotiation and what sort of shaping of policy happens,
mm-hmm.
How it's different behind closed doors or in meetings than it is out in public, because out in public people can get, you know, in front of cameras and whatever, a little bit more debate mode.
Yeah, sort of a catch-22, right? Like the maybe proponents wait for those meetings to happen and session runs out because they didn't come out in the public and say anything. But real quick before we wrap up here, because we're going to lose this studio, Senator Scott Fitzgerald he didn't do one-on-one interviews. He had a press conference and his big twist at the end was
a property tax proposal that's going to come out in 2020. This is something we'd heard kind of rumblings about. Maybe Republicans were going to look at taxes in 2020 and cutting taxes. We got a little bit more detail on that, more specificity. Leader Fitzgerald said that what they're going to work on is a property tax cut because constituents have been contacting his office concerned about some of the hikes that they've seen on their bills this year. A number of factors contributing to that we could get into. But he said they want to look at potentially taking the charge for technical colleges off of property tax bills and shifting those to GPR. So there wouldn't be any negative impact for technical colleges. Still the same amount of money, just coming from a different pool.
Yeah. So what you could be talking about, though, then is the state spending money in an election year or the legislature spending money in an election year, putting it on the governor's lap. And who knows what's going to happen there if you're framing this money is being spent on property taxes instead of something else. And where the governor's going to be on this, it could be a little political drama there toward the end.
Yep.
Okay, this is our very last minute because we're going to lose the studio.
Yes.
And we got to get going. Laurel White, anything else to add?
No, I think that's it.
Oh, we did
it. Good. We made
it. The last minute twist is that we actually made this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we are.
Okay, so we thought we were done, but we weren't quite done. We ran out of studio time, and we got out of the studio and realized, hey, we didn't talk about the court stuff that we said we were going to talk about.
And we had to talk about it.
So here we are recording from my office at the station. The acoustics are not quite as good.
Yeah, very different. Different microphones.
If you're sensing something a little bit different in your headphones, your earbuds, it's because we're in a different place now.
Call it bonus content. Call it what you will.
This was not a gag to get in a last minute ad, but here it is.
Yep.
We've extended the last minute. So let's go here. But like, easy on the detail there, Laurel White. We know you like to get into
I'll pump the brakes on the details.
So you've heard a lot about this voter registration list purge that may or may not be happening depending on what happens in this legal battle that's playing out right now. And this is based on a list of voters who are flagged as maybe having moved. Take it from there.
Okay, so basically what's going on there is that a conservative advocacy group, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, is suing the State Elections Commission, saying that they're waiting too long to remove some of these people who may have moved in Wisconsin from the voter rolls. The Elections Commission says that it has broader jurisdiction over making that decision of how long they wait before they remove some people. They've been waiting under current policy up to 2 years to remove some people. Will, the conservative group, says they should be removed within a month of not responding to a state mailing. So that's kind of the crux of this argument. And what's interesting and the kind of the twists I think that we've had are the developments in the state lawsuit, which was the first lawsuit that was filed. And then the second thing is there's a new federal lawsuit that has emerged to be part of this legal experience.
The purge legal experience,
because the Purge was a movie, and it's now this could be like a Purge sequel, but I think the Purge was a very dark movie, so I don't think we really want to be associated necessarily with that. But
well, yeah, purge is not purge, like a pretty word. There's no really happy connotation of purge.
That's true. That's a good point.
Cleansing, I don't know.
Whatever. Also not a great word.
It's a value-laden word, kind of. But, I mean, it does get the point across that depending on what happens in court here, you're either going to have 200-plus thousand names just wiped away from the state's voter registration rolls, or if the state prevails, the state in this case being the Wisconsin Elections Commission, you know, they won't be automatically removed until 2021.
Mm-hmm. So the circuit court ruled like, yep, remove those folks. They agreed with the conservative group. The circuit court judge did. So get those folks off. The ruling was appealed.
By the Wisconsin Department of Justice, run now by Josh Call. Sometimes the DOJ doesn't agree with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, but they do right now.
Yep, so they're appealing on behalf of the Elections Commission representing
court.
The state in state court.
And the Elections Commission is like split 3-3 between Republican and Democratic appointees. And I don't know, amazingly, they agree on things a lot. They had initially agreed on this proposal for like how to treat these names very non-controversially. It said, okay, well, you know, we had trouble with this the last time we tried to just wipe these names off the list. So we're going to let them stay on until 2021. It's not bipartisan anymore now.
No.
The last time the Elections Commission met to talk about this, they were 3-3 on what to do next after the judge's initial ruling.
Yeah.
So Josh Call has filed an appeal on this in state court, and Will is saying,
let's take it straight to the state Supreme Court.
Which, where there's a 5-2 conservative majority.
Yes.
And justices who agree with us on a lot of things. Okay, are we really, really done this time?
Oh boy, let me think here. I don't want to. We'd have to move. Would we have to move to another room to continue?
I think there could very well be another development in this case, like before we release this podcast. But just know a lot's happening. Well, Laurel White is WPR's Capitol reporter,
and Sean Johnson is our Capitol bureau chief.
For all the latest twists and turns in Wisconsin political news, you should really subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcasts on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play, whatever app you choose. You can leave us a review, too. That helps more people find the show. You can also find all of our old episodes at WPR.org/politics.